Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. And now, here's your host, John Hansen, with Greg Cosell. Welcome to another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast. And now, here's your host, John Hansen, with Greg Cosell.
It is another edition of the FantasyGuru.com podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. I'm John Hansen. It's Friday morning, August 21st, and we're well into the preseason now and the exhibition season, and we're going to break it down. But first, we want to remind you, this is our season for subscriptions, of course, at FantasyGuru.com, and we are working our tails off to produce as much content as possible and update everything. And that's the real big one. We are doing a daily stock watch. So every day on the website, you can get an outline and a look at the players whose stocks are rising, falling, holding steady and all that. And also, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Mike Horn's identity series. Mike took a ton of time and wrote up 32 different articles outlining the statistical history of every offensive coordinator slash head coach, offensive play caller, the dude running the offense, basically. And if you don't have time to read all 32 articles, we put up a one-page cheat sheet that has all 32 teams and expectations statistically in the fantasy world, what we should have for all 32 of the offensive coordinators. For example, if a guy produces typically a wide receiver one, it'll show that in the wide receiver column. So it's a real handy cheat sheet. So check that out and everything else out at fantasyguru.com. And with that, we bring in our guy, Greg Cosell. Greg, good morning.
Mr. Hansen, what's happening?
A little football game last night, a couple of them actually. So we'll start there. And you probably didn't watch any tape. I don't know if you saw anything on television.
I just watched all of Johnny Manziel and broke down every play, but that's what I watched.
Okay. Well, look, we've been talking about it kind of all off season about Johnny, and we're hearing good things ever since he got out of the rehab, that there's no question about it, Greg. And Josh McCown's still the starter, but I think we all expect Johnny Football or John Football to get out there. So what did you see on tape? There were a couple of plays where he actually looked like he kind of won from the pocket, Greg. It looks like he's improving.
Definitely a step forward for Johnny Manziel. He was not frenetic or chaotic, either mentally or physically. There was some sense of rhythm to his play. The Bills threw a lot at him. I thought that he did a good job for the most part recognizing things. He was, you know, a little uneven, missed a few things, which I would expect. So that's not a concern. Certainly made some positive plays, beating the unblocked defender with quick throws. A couple of times didn't turn it loose to open receivers, which is also what I would expect. But I say overall, I would say it was definitely a step forward and a positive performance for Manziel.
You know, he's always going to be Johnny Football. He's always going to take off and run and all of that.
But he didn't do it very much. And he didn't, you know, there were only, I'm trying to think, you know, because there were 22 plays that I watched, which included, you know, his runs as well, not just his throws. He was not really frenetic, John. I mean, you know, just there was one play where he clearly missed. I mean, the final play of the game, the fourth down play, which I'm sure people think that Vince Mayall should have caught the ball, and he should have. But he had Jennings wide open on the inside quick slant. That would have been a first down. That was the only play I really thought where he just sort of took off.
For the most part,
he did not do that.
Yeah. I mean, he's always, when the bullets are flying for real in a real game, he's always going to run. But do you think he can get to a point at which someone like you, and you're kind of an old school guy?
Well, it's not me. It's the coaching staff. I'm irrelevant. Right. It's the coaching staff.
Yeah, well, I may view your opinion a little bit higher than the coaching staff, but that's a story for
Well,
another
you
day.
should. I appreciate that. You shouldn't, but I appreciate that. But
Right.
do I? Are you essentially asking me? Do I think he'll get to the point where he can play with some sense of you know, timing, rhythm, calm, composure, as opposed to being a frenetic, chaotic guy? Is that what you're
Yeah.
ultimately asking?
Yeah, because he's always going to run, but can he get to a point to where he's even pleasing someone like you?
You know, I got to tell you this. And I'm sure some people listening, you know, have heard me talk about Manziel and my concerns with him. But I've also learned over the years that you never say never, because when you do that, you're wrong on guys.
Yeah.
And I've been wrong. Believe me. I mean, you know,
Sure.
I've been wrong. Everybody's wrong. I've been wrong.
Of course.
You know, I don't want to say that he couldn't do it. You know, I think with him,
Right.
it's a longer process, just because
Right.
I think he, as you say, and I agree with you, that he does have it maybe perhaps a little more in his DNA that he's going to take off. But he did get blitzed last night. You know, obviously they're not game planning for Johnny Manziel. So all you can do when you watch this stuff is look at the game. It's hard to put this in a big, broader context and say, oh, okay, now he's the starter, no question, after last night's performance. You know, I don't want to go there, but I thought last night was clearly a step forward. You know, the touchdown he threw may have been his best throw in the NFL. I mean, it was
Yeah.
a really well-designed post-wheel combination, but he stepped up in the pocket in response to pressure. He threw it with anticipation. Now that was the throw, so it's not as if he was necessarily reading. That was the design of the play. So, you know, he threw to the design of the play, but it was thrown with anticipation. And it was a very well thrown ball.
We'd like to see command of the offense, the poise in the pocket, the ability to process the information, and keep all the Johnny football stuff in your back pocket in case of emergency.
Well, that can't be his MO. You know, I agree with you. Are there always going to be times he does that? Yeah, I'm sure there will be. I don't think you can take that totally out of him, and we can debate whether you want to or not, because it's a very fine line, and there's no rule book for that line. So, you know, you have to be careful. But, you know, overall, it was, you know, like I said, I just spent an hour watching 22 plays. So, I mean, I didn't fly through them. So I thought it was overall a clear, positive performance. You know, my guess is, because coaching staffs should do this, they should nitpick, they'll say that it was positive and that he improved incrementally. They're not going to say, oh, my God, he was great, because he wasn't. He improved. That's
Yeah.
all you're looking for with each game.
Of course, Josh McCown pushing 40. He's no gemstone either. I mean, he has not looked very good here in the preseason. And
yeah, and I didn't watch that on tape. I watched the game on TV, you know, through, you know,
yeah.
almost all the games. So, I mean, I saw it on TV. I didn't watch Josh on tape this morning because I just, you know, I didn't have time. I actually, believe it or not, John, I actually did want to sleep a few hours, if that was
Wow,
okay.
You didn't get into the office at 4 a.m. this morning, Greg?
6:30, not 4, if that's okay.
Wow. 6:30.
So I saw him on, you know, and we all know why they put him out for that extra series, because they wanted him to have some success, and he did have some success on that final series. But, you know, Josh, everybody's hanging their hat with Josh on those 5 or 6 games in Chicago, where he was outstanding. It's
he
tough
was.
To argue that. He was in a very difficult situation in Tampa last year because he played behind a porous O-line and he got beat up, but he also made a number of poor decisions, which theoretically, and he made a couple last night. And theoretically, if you're playing Josh McCown as a veteran quarterback, the last thing you'd expect are poor decisions. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, we've said over and over that Johnny Manziel will play this year. Obviously, all we can do is speak. You know, we're doing this on Friday morning after a Thursday night game, the second preseason game. All we can do is speak now. We can't sit here and say, oh, in 6 weeks, Johnny Manziel is going to be great and he'll be playing. We don't know that. But all we can do is speak to where we are now. Manziel clearly showed some improvement, and McCown is, you know, continue to be sort of an uneven up and down player.
We do an article at fantasyguru.com that we're actually putting up today. And I know, Greg, you're on pins and needles for the release of this article, but we call it Mr. Relevant, players to take with one of your last picks. And especially
Right.
it's, It's good for those who are in these deeper leagues where there's really nothing on the waiver wire. We're going to have a meeting today about whether or not Johnny Football should be on the list.
Oh, boy.
It's a powwow. Yeah.
So there you go.
I'll tell you, one guy who's on the list. One guy who's on the list is already Tyrod Taylor as we transition there.
And again, I didn't watch him on tape, and I will, but I watched the game, and I thought that he threw the ball really well. I thought his accuracy is what stood out because he made a couple of very precise third down throws, and that's what he's ultimately going to be asked to do in the context of that offense. They'll mix in a little read option. Again, no one's game planning for him, but he's certainly capable of doing that. People have already started with the whole Russell Wilson comparison. And, John, I don't want to go there. The guy's played two preseason games. He's never started in the NFL. So let's not make quite that comparison yet. Clearly, on third down, he made some really good throws. And I don't think he looked to run last night either. And I think that's important. So, again, you go through two preseason games and we speak now, I think Tyrod Taylor has shown himself well.
Yeah, there's no question. And I saw him step up into the pocket a couple of times, as you mentioned there, didn't look to run and kept his downfield focus. And he looked like he had a good command of the offense, got a pretty live arm. And look, let's not forget, he's kind of learned on the job for four full years in Baltimore. And I got to tell you, I think that he's going to start week one. I mean, I think he's the guy. I'm not going to officially name him the starter, Greg, because that means nothing, of course. I've done that in the past. But what does this all mean to the offense? Because as you know, Greg, he did all this without his top three receivers.
Correct.
Sammy Watkins, no Robert Woods, no Percy Harvin. And look, full disclosure, I have not been high on LeSean McCoy this year for fantasy, even though he's going to get the ball. But is this a game changer of sorts with Tyrod Taylor? You mentioned the read option. That's something with the mobility that can create space for a guy like McCoy.
Well, theoretically, they're now trying to build a profile like the Seahawks. And again, I'm not comparing Taylor to Wilson. Now I'm just talking about team profile, how they want to play. And I think the way Rex sees this is, we know he wants to run the ball. He wants to play great defense, okay? And if his quarterback can be multidimensional and not turn it over and make enough plays, whether it's throwing or running, because he views running as important. Don't forget his dad came up with Randall Cunningham when he was a head coach, and Buddy always believed Randall make three plays and we can win with the rest of our team. Rex has some of that philosophy. So, I don't think they're going to ask if it is Tyrod Taylor, and I tend to agree that that will end up being the case because of the way Rex thinks. I think they're not looking for him to drop back 35 to 40 times a game.
Oh, no.
Because they're not going to be – ideally, they're not going to be in games like that. They're not going to have him do that.
Absolutely. We talk about it all the time this summer in the office. Look, we know what they want to do. Throw it 19 times for Tyrod Taylor. Run it, run it 5, 6, 7 times and hand the ball off and play defense.
Since we're talking fantasy, don't you think in an ideal world when all's said and done, if Tyrod Taylor goes 15 for 24 for 191, rushes the ball 8 times for 62, that's kind of what they would see as, I think the kind of game they would want him to play.
He's a top 15 quarterback, Greg, if he does that every week. As crazy as it sounds, he's going to be really impactful. In fact, I like him week one. Start him against the Colts.
There you go, John. I like when you get excited and you get all worked, because you're having your meeting today. You're fired up.
I am. We've got the Johnny Football meeting scheduled for 10:30 Eastern, and it's going to be a lot of debate at the Fantasy Guru headquarters. So we move on, and the Redskin game, and I don't know what else we can say about RG3, Greg.
Well, the one thing I will say, and I didn't watch the game on tape, and you saw the highlights just like I did. I don't think the game's been on yet, and I'm working today, so I'm not gonna. I'll watch it. I'll probably get to it later, but just from what I saw, okay. Again, this has nothing to do with RG3. We've discussed him ad nauseum. You know, there's nothing more to add on RG3, but boy, there were too many plays where he had no chance.
Yeah.
And I mean, and he took vicious hits. Now, again, without seeing the plays and understanding the blocking scheme and whether the ball should have come out quick, I can't speak to that, but the pressure was quick. That's one thing we know. The pressure was really quicker than it needs to be in the NFL. And, you know, the one play where I think he actually threw the ball, and I think DeAndre Levy hit him. I think it might have been a green dog. Again, just watching from TV. I mean, he just laid him out right in his rib cage, and those hurt.
Yeah, you've got veteran O-line coach Bill Callahan taking over here, and I think that they're transitioning a little bit. They're changing, going a little bit more to a power scheme, going away from the zone stuff and all that. But still, I still think we have issues with RG3 not seeing the field clearly, not pulling the trigger.
Yeah.
And ultimately it's just a recipe for disaster. And Greg, I know you don't get into this kind of stuff, but I'm a big body language guy. It sure seems like his confidence is lost. And you lose your confidence as a professional athlete, man. Oof, it's not good.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, again, that's hard to know, but the reality is he hasn't had a ton of success. And you know, I've actually heard psychiatrists and psychologists speak about confidence and speak about it in different ways. And right now he doesn't have a real lengthy recent track record to draw upon, you know, and that's the difference, you know. But I will say this, and again, you know, I haven't seen the highlights yet. I'm just looking at numbers, and this is a guy I am absolutely going to watch again. But I see Matt Jones had 8 for 44 on a touchdown.
Oh, totally. That's where I'm going to go with this. And I think that Jake.
And I mentioned him last week, you know, after one game. Yeah. And again, you know, a lot of people who may not follow me and don't know me, you know, I got a number of tweets when I mentioned, oh, you're going to say that off one game. Well, you know, John, you know, because we worked together for years. I mean, I watched these in college. I watched 7, 8 college games. You know, when I talk about Matt Jones, I'm not seeing him make 5 NFL runs and go, oh, my God, you know, wow, this guy's great. I've seen, you know, these guys play meaningfully in college. And I liked Matt Jones coming out for what he is. You know, I'm not suggesting he's Adrian Peterson, but I think Matt Jones at 6'3", 230 or 6'2", 230, he's clearly got NFL size. He's got quicker feet than you might think. You know, people didn't take note of him because he only rushed for about 800 yards at Florida last year, not 1,500. So, but he's got an NFL big back skill set with light feet.
Yeah, he certainly looks the part, and it looks like the play strength looks pretty good for Matt Jones, and also Greg, a burst through the hole, and you know they lost Silas Red, and the kid Chris Thompson is tiny, and we all know
he's a different kind of back. I mean he's not going to be used in the same way Matt Jones would be used.
Yeah, I think Matt Jones, Greg, is going to see some opportunities to play alongside Alfred Morris.
Look, Alfred Morris, you can't say anything about Alfred Morris that's not really positive given where he came from and what he's done. I'm just speaking about potential skill sets, and I think Matt Jones could be, and I'm saying could be because, you know, I don't want to go crazy either, you know, but could be a more skilled runner.
Yeah,
and I think if they're going to go more to a power type scheme, gap scheme stuff, Jones may fit that a little better.
Yeah, because I don't think you liked him. I know some other people maybe we talked to didn't really like him in his zone. They thought he was a power guy all the way.
You mean Jones or Morris?
Matt Jones. Matt Jones.
Oh, I think Matt Jones would be a very good gap scheme runner, which is power counter, those kinds of runs. I think that would be his strength.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Alfred Morris is good in the zone. He could probably do both. But yeah, so there you go. And we'll see about DeSean Jackson. They're a little bit banged up there, but they're kind of a mess. And by the way, I think I've heard some things. I talked to a guy who covers the team yesterday, actually. I think Jay Gruden actually likes Colt McCoy over Kirk Cousins.
I've heard rumblings of that. You know, again, that's going to be a really interesting situation to watch. I'm sure it's causing you a little bit of a problem, you know, with who's the quarterback there. But, you know, I think it's going to take some time to play out, to be honest with you.
Yeah. You know, it's actually not that big of a problem. People are just in the fantasy world just almost written RG3 off. I mean, like, no one.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Yeah, it's completely off the radar. It's unbelievable. Let's get back into it. But I just bring up Colt McCoy because I think if they go to someone other than RG3, I actually think it's going to be Colt McCoy first off the bench. He was actually really good last year. Actually completed some downfield throws. He threw for well over 8 yards. An attempt. He completed like, what, 70% of his passes. Statistically, he was really good. And they do have weapons there in Washington. So,
you know, and keep one thing in mind. You know, Jay Gruden, and just a thought here. I mean, I thought of this before, but it just hit me again as you were speaking. And actually, I love when we sort of have these philosophical conversations, given that there's not really games, you know, meaningful games yet. Is Jay Gruden came from Cincinnati, where he had a quarterback who, at his best, okay, Andy Dalton, you know, at his best is one of those efficient guys, not a big armed guy, but, you know, can sort of be a compliment, lead your team, that kind of quarterback, right?
Yes.
Theoretically, Colt McCoy is the same guy.
Right.
You know, that style of quarterback, they're very similar. And, I mean, Kirk Cousins, theoretically, is the same guy, too, but,
he's throwing it to the other team. That's the problem.
Correct. Usually coaches don't like that. You know, I've learned that over the years. Coaches don't like that.
Yeah. Well, Colt McCoy last year, again, it's a smaller sample size, but 128 attempts. He completed 71% of his passes for 8.3 yards an attempt. That's pretty good. You know, he did throw three picks, but that's pretty good numbers right there. And, you know, as a group, their numbers were impressive. The quarterbacks, it was in the upper 60s in terms of the percentage, and it was over 8 yards an attempt as a team last year. And thank you very much to Sean Jackson. I know it's other players, but that was he was a big part of that. Moving on here, and let's get right back into the divisional look here. AFC East. We'll start there. We did talk about the Buffalo Bills, and we'll see if they can get these receivers on the field. Let's go to Miami. And again, we've covered the league and all the teams the last couple of weeks here with you. We don't want to kind of rehash every single
thing. Well, I'll just say one thing. I mean, you know, if I could just throw out a couple of thoughts, you know, because, you know, Tannehill only played, obviously, in the first, you know, we only have the one game to go on, but he only played the first series. They had a 14-play touchdown drive when he played the first series. He was in the shotgun on every snap but two. So, again, I don't know if they just wanted to practice that game or if that's the way they're going to run their offense, but I found that very interesting.
And it's great news for Lamar Miller, right, Greg? I mean, that's you want Lamar Miller lining up in a spread situation, right? And three wide receiver, and that's why Lamar Miller did well last year. I've warmed up to him the last month or so. He's looking pretty good here.
And that's his style. You know, I think he fits that style of offense. And as we said numerous times, it's Bill Lazor who was the quarterback coach in Philly, and now he's the OC in Miami going into his second year. So he's incorporating a lot of those, you know, spread Chip Kelly principles.
No question about it. And look, I'm still a little surprised that Jay Ajayi has been buried. But look, he's a rookie. And I know you talked with Joe Dolan 2 weeks ago about Damian Williams, but I agree. I mean, that kid is very talented. I mean, he's big. He moves well. He's
and
a good,
he's a good receiver. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, to me right now, he's one of the better backup running backs in the league. I mean, I'd love to see what that kid can do with a lot of touches. I'm not sure he's a lead back, but I think he might settle in perfectly into a role where he's getting like 10, 12 touches a week.
I wanted to ask you.
Yeah, I wanted to ask because we, you know, I've talked to someone down there, and we haven't heard all that much on Jordan Cameron. So I wanted to bring up Deion Sims because Cameron's got major availability issues. Do you like Sims? He's a more of a complete tight end. I know he can block. What do you think he'd bring to the table? Should he be the main tight end if Cameron were out?
Well, my feeling about him, you know, with his skill set, he's a very big man, and I think he has pretty good feet for a big man. I don't think he's necessarily a seam stretcher. You know, I don't think he's got the Jordan Cameron skill set in terms of getting vertical, but he's not a big he's not a plodding guy given his size. So, you know, I think within the context of a quick passing game, which I think is what Bill Lazor for the most part wants to do, Bill Lazor wants to do. I think Sims can fit that.
Don't really have much on the Jets.
Yeah, and until we sort of get, I think, past this weekend, I mean, next week we'll have a whole lot more to talk, you know, because teams are going to play guys more this week, and we're going to get a better feel.
Yeah, in New England, James White did have 52 yards receiving in the opener, in the preseason opener.
And
White, yeah, I was just going to say, he looks almost worthless as an interior runner. Not good. But I thought he looked pretty good out in space, Greg, and there were notable there were a couple notable pickups in pass pro. And
I would just be curious, John, as your difference between almost worthless and worthless.
Well, almost worthless is like 3.3 yards a carry. Worthless is like, you know, two.
I was trying to get that distinction.
Yeah. I mean, that's a difficult backfield to navigate.
Yeah. You're right. Getting back to the more important point, I saw when he caught passes, whether screens or quick throws, he had some good lateral quickness. He's more of a quickness guy than a speed guy. You know, I think he showed that pretty well. And I think ultimately, you know, look, New England is almost impossible to figure out, as you know, as to who's going to get carries on a weekly basis. I mean, all you have to do is go to last year when Jonas Gray has 37 carries, and I think he probably then didn't have 37 carries the rest of the season combined. You know, that's hard to know, but I think that James White's role would be more as a, you know, he's not quite Shane Vereen, but I think he'd play in those kinds of situations.
Yeah, because we all know LeGarrette Blount is not someone
he's not going to be on the field in those situations, correct?
Neither is Jonas Gray, although he dropped some weight, looked pretty quick. Travaris Cadet, Deion Lewis, one of those guys is probably not going to make the team. And James White has an advantage over those guys. He was on the team last year. Of course, Brandon Bolden. To me, it's like Brandon Bolden, who's just a jack of all trades, master of none, and James White. Let's move on to the AFC North in Cincinnati. We're really starting to get very intrigued by Tyler Eifert. Now, we know it's Hugh Jackson, run-based offense. Marvin Jones, by the way, I don't know if you've seen anything from Bengals this year, but that was a very crisp driver too for the first team offense. Marvin Jones back on the outside, Sanu, the versatile receiver on the inside in the slot, Eifert. They're loaded, Greg.
I mean, they've got weapons, and you know they've got the run game. You know, this is a really, assuming everybody's healthy, and again, Dalton's in his fifth year, so I don't want to sit here and say it's a crossroads year because he's under contract and they're not getting rid of him. But you know, he did not play as well last year as he had the year before in his third year. In fact, you could say he regressed. And you know, he doesn't have a lot of margin for error with the kind of quarterback he is. He must be an efficient, consistent, precise thrower. They do have some weapons now. It'll be very interesting to see. We know they're going to start with a run game because that's the way they have to, but you still have to make throws, as we've discussed numerous times. And Andy Dalton, it's like I said, he's going to have to be a better player this year.
For Eifert, though, it's all kind of there for him. Again, I don't expect him to throw for 575, but and Dalton is Dalton, but Dalton is got to be like totally comfortable in this offense. I mean, he's been around the block here, and that's a great environment for a guy like Eifert, former number one pick, plus playing with AJ Green and with a good running game. It's all there for Eifert to have a really nice year. So we agree there.
Yeah, I would agree 100%.
Let's move on to Baltimore. I don't know if you saw any of the tape from last year, and if you had any thoughts on, granted, one game, Lorenzo Taliaferro versus.
Well, I actually went out to the Eagles-Ravens combined practice on Wednesday and talked to some people. And Taliaferro, they said, is having a tremendous camp.
Okay.
But their run game's not going to change dramatically because Forsett's the number one guy and he's a zone runner, so they're not going to change the foundation of their run game significantly. But they said Taliaferro's having a great camp, and they actually really have liked what they've seen from the rookie, the fourth round pick Buck Allen from USC. They said he's really you know, it's funny when you talk to people, because I talked to some of their personnel people, and I made the point that if you liked Buck Allen, because I thought this when I watched him in college, if you liked him, you can see a little Matt Forte. And one of the personnel guys I was talking to said, that's exactly the way I felt. So they really like him, and they said he's had a really good camp.
Seems like if Forsett is out of the mix for whatever reason, because I love Forsett. I think we all do. We should, for fantasy, especially in point per reception leagues, because Joe Flacco's breaking in a new number one, essentially, in Breshad Perriman, who's got an injury problem here, and Max Williams. You know, that's a lot to ask. I know there are other guys here, Marlon Brown, Kamar Aiken, of course, Steve Smith. But to me, it's Joe Flacco is going to be looking to check it down a ton. But if Forsett is out of the mix, it seems now that Taliaferro is likely your first, second down back, you know, your inside kind of banger. And Buck Allen, you know, if he can do the pass protection stuff, you know, he's a good receiver, Greg. So it'll be a timeshare. Be like a timeshare, but Taliaferro gets the edge as the first and second down runner.
By the way, regarding Perriman, his injury is not a serious thing. They're just being cautious. And I was told by a couple of people that his skill set is, some of the corners think his skill set is high, high level right now. So it'll be interesting, you know, assuming, you know, he gets back and he's not one of those guys who's always hurt. You know, you don't want to fall into that Marquise Lee category. But, you know, let's hope that Perriman gets back, because his skill set is pretty darn good.
Oh, yeah. Look, I told him at the combine, I was like, your dad won me a fantasy title in 1985. So,
right.
He's a good kid, is what I was trying to say there. And I know you are very high on him. Max Williams, though, and your thoughts there with Crockett Gilmore. I know
They really like their tight ends, because Williams, they said, has a lot to learn. They love his athleticism. He moves well. You know, certain things that he clearly needs to work on, like all rookies. They really like the Gilmore kid. You know, with Pitt's situation, who knows what his situation is at this point. Unfortunately, he's got an injury history that seems to happen every year, which is a shame, because he's a pretty good player. But, you know, they feel pretty good that if Gilmore has to be their number one guy, that he can be that guy.
In Pittsburgh, did you watch any of them in the preseason yet? They played the
I did not watch there, no, but I did see Martavis Bryant, by the way, and boy, you saw the touchdown, correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's starting to, I almost feel already that, you know, he's bulked up a little bit, and he's more confident to start really abusing cornerbacks. Like,
I mean, he's, you know, I saw really fluid and fast. I mean, and you lose sight of the fact that he's 6'4", and he's about 215 pounds.
Yeah. And it looks like Marcus Wheaton may officially start over him. Right now, I think he is still over him. And Ed Bouchette, our friend at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, is kind of projecting him to start. But does that really matter? They're going to go three wide a lot, Greg, I would think.
Yeah, they got a lot of talent on offense, John. I mean, they, you know, and I think you and I have talked about this. I can't remember if we have or not, but they're sort of changing the structure of their team, because they feel really good about their offense. So their defense is going to be a lot more cover two, try to force the opposing offense to go 10, 12, 13 plays to score, which is always hard to do in this league. You know, they think that they can score, you know, 27 to 35 points a week.
Oh, so a bend but don't break defense for the Steelers.
Yeah, they're going to move away from the pure 3-4 attacking style defense and play. Wow. You know, because Mike Tomlin cut his teeth, you know, under Tony Dungy, and I think they see their team a lot like the Colts in the mid 2000s with Peyton, where they could score a lot of points, and Tony Dungy was there, and they played the cover two. You know, I think they see themselves a little bit that way.
There you go, and we like that for fantasy. By the way, do you think D'Angelo Williams has enough left in the tank? I do. I watch him, and I still think he moves pretty well.
Yeah, and again, in an ideal world, I know that Le'Veon Bell is suspended. I think it's just two games now, right? Wasn't it reduced?
Yes.
I think it's two.
Yes.
I mean, I think Williams, in kind of a spot starting backup role, is still a perfectly fine player. I think he's probably not the guy anymore, but that's not going to happen in Pittsburgh anyway, where you'd want him to, you know, he's not going to carry 250 times. But, you know, like I said, he's not going to be asked to do that.
Over in the AFC South, I know you've got something of a man crush on Philip Dorsett for the Indianapolis Colts, and only one game, but geez, it's his first game, Greg, and he was lined up all over the place. So
yeah, they wanted to get a look at him for sure.
Yeah, and it looks like they've got clear plans for him. And Do you think that this is going to be more of a downfield attacking passing offense more than ever with these two guys plus Dante Moncrief?
Well, you know, that's hard to know because they can also line up with Fleener and Allen and two tight ends. I mean, I think they can kind of do everything, and of course Andrew Luck allows you to do everything because he gets it. So, you know, I think they're going to be game specific. I think they're going to be matchup specific. You know, look, obviously when you have guys who can run, I mean, Dorsett, Hilton, Moncrief, people forget about Moncrief. He can run now and he's big. So yeah, are they going to take their shots? Without question. But I wouldn't just sit here and say, oh, they're going to be a vertical passing team, you know, and that's just what they're going to be. I think they're going to be everything, to be honest with you.
True. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, they got two really good tight ends, and obviously Andre, they can run it with Frankie Gore if they'd like. But I like personally the fact that they've gone out the last few years and drafted these speedy receivers and get vertical. That's good for a running attack. And your thoughts on Josh Robinson? I understand the Eagles, I guess, missed a couple of tackles on that touchdown run, but the bowling ball, Greg, I like this guy. They were talking about him as a three down back earlier, and he caught a decent number of balls at Mississippi State last year, Greg. So he's going to make the team. I think maybe he can emerge as the number two, assuming Vic Ballard doesn't, make a meteoric rise. Your thoughts on Josh Robinson?
Well, he's another one of those guys that's short but not really small. I mean, he's, you know, like you said, he's got that bowling ball build. He showed some quick feet. I remember watching him at Mississippi State. You know, he was there featured. Was it Mississippi State or Mississippi?
Yes.
I forget now.
Mississippi State.
Yeah. You know, he obviously was there feature back. I mean, I saw him break some long runs too, you know. So, yeah, I mean, he could emerge on a team that's sort of searching for a quality number two. He could emerge.
Yeah, I've shown so much love for Frank Gore this summer. I want to get the handcuff correct. Yeah, he caught 28 balls for 370 last year, 13 yards a catch for the bowling ball. So we'll see about everybody else here. Dan Heron, the veteran, and of course Vic Ballard, and they got Zerlon Tipton as well. I don't think he's long for the roster. Moving on to Jacksonville. Greg, did you watch the tape here? Because I thought that Blake Bortles looked pretty darn good.
I did watch that tape, yep.
I thought he made some beautiful throws. That throw to Clay Harbor was wonderful. When Clay Harbor didn't make it, the catch should have been a touchdown.
Oh, that was a great throw, by the way. I mean, that was really nice. I thought Bortles looked very comfortable. He was composed. He was poised. He was aware of his progressions and the timing needed. I thought that his delivery was a little more compact, or I should say a lot more compact.
He clearly shortened it up.
He tightened it. He had less movement with it. I thought he looked really, really good. I mean, there were a couple of throws that were clear examples of his development, you know, without going into the specifics. So, you know, we're not going to sit here break down plays that people can't see. But there were a couple of throws that were clear examples of his development in terms of progressions and understanding who to throw it to and when. So, yes, I mean, for one game, he looked very comfortable. And I'm very anxious to see him go through the preseason.
TJ Yeldon, we like, but he's been on the shelf with the finger injury, and it's becoming more and more evident that they're going to work in other guys early on. They're not just going to hand him the third three down back role. And I thought Toby actually looked good. He
you know, it's funny you say that. I mean, we know what he is, you know, and obviously he's not a feature back, and no one's, they're not going to use him that way. But he actually, you know, just watching the tape, for a second I had to say, is that Toby Gerhardt? You know, because he actually looked pretty good.
Lynch?
Well, I didn't quite say that, but I hope you didn't, John, either.
No. Is that Marshawn Lynch who just, you know, got out of the hospital? No, just kidding. How about Denard Robinson, though? Because,
you know, I like him. We talked about him last year a lot. And, you know, In a role where he can be sort of a satellite and be in the backfield on it, you know, on occasion, whatever that is, I think he's a good player. I mean, you know, last year he had that 3-4 game stretch where he was actually sort of a feature guy. Now, I don't think he can do that for 16 games. Neither do they, or they wouldn't have drafted Yeldon. But I think he's a pretty valuable piece of their puzzle.
Not only that, but I think they're really pleased with him. In fact, I was told – that he's had a great offseason and that his vision and feel for the position has improved. So if that's the case, you're left with a pretty dynamic mover there as a complementary player. So I think he's going to be a factor in this backfield. That's going to maybe hurt the upside a little bit of a T.J. Yeldon. Moving on to the Houston Texans, we all see Hard Knocks produce right
there. How much do you love Bill O'Brien on Hard Knocks? I mean, is Bill O'Brien the greatest?
He moved up on my list of all-time favorite people from 155,000th to like 9. I mean, he's like way up there on my board. He's fantastic. I love the
he's
no
fantastic.
Filter. Yes.
Yeah. There's also a great book that if people are interested who like sports books written by a guy named John Bacon called Fourth and Long. It was written a couple of years ago. John Bacon he really followed four teams. It was O'Brien's first year at Penn State. He followed Penn State, Ohio State, Northwestern, and Michigan. And O'Brien comes across phenomenally well in the book too. I mean, he's just one of those guys.
Yeah. And no, not a disingenuous bone in his body. When he's dropping those F-bombs and kind of upset and whatever, he's completely sincere in everything he says. And you like that, because sometimes I hear these coaches, you know, talking rah-rah, and you're like, I'm not really feeling that it being legitimate.
Right.
Yeah, he's totally legitimate. The quarterback battle here, I thought Hoyer looked pretty darn good, but you know, Mallett also looked good. What is the problem with Mallett? Is it a slow delivery? Is it just accuracy? I think would be the number one thing. But your thoughts on this battle?
I'm not sure how it's going to play out. They're two totally different kinds of quarterbacks. That's why it's hard to know. You know, I thought Mallett in the game anyway, his stride was a little shorter. His delivery was a little quicker. I mean, we all know he's a big time arm talent, you know, and the thing is Hoyer made a great throw on the touchdown to Cecil Shorts, obviously. Yeah. I'm sure you saw that play. You know, it was a really good throw, but then, you know, when Mallett comes in the game and he throws it, even if he's throwing a 10-yard ball, you just go, wow, that just comes out differently. So, again, being able to throw it hard is not automatically, you know, mean you're going to be a great NFL quarterback, but Mallett just, he has a bigger, better arm than Hoyer. And it's a fascinating battle to me. I don't have a good feel for that, John. I don't know how you feel about it. I can't sit here right now, even with Hard Knocks, and say, you know, I know who's going to be the guy.
Yeah, it's real tough. And they both have, you know, in-depth knowledge of the system, obviously. I would look at Ryan Mallett. You know, if I were a Texan fan, I'd be rooting for Ryan Mallett. Nothing against Brian Hoyer. I know he's a great dude, but I look at Mallett as a younger, more upside-oriented option. And I think the ceiling's a little bit higher for Mallett. What about Alfred Ballou? I thought he looked good. He's a fairly talented guy, passes the eyeball test. He looked improved. Greg, your thoughts on Ballou? He was very patient. As we know, it's patience to the hole and then speed through the hole. I thought we saw that a couple of times with Blue.
Yeah, I mean, the big run came, you know, he ran through a hole, which, hey, that happens too. So you can't discount those plays. You know, I think he's a tough runner. We saw him last year carry 36 times against Cleveland in Ryan Mallett's first start. You know, they're going to run. You know what Bill O'Brien wants to do. And if you didn't know anything about him, just watching Hard Knocks, you know that he wants a physical team. He wants a tough team. You know, there's sort of an old school approach to his offense, even though it's really well put together. You know, he's not necessarily let's go empty and four wide. You know, he believes in you run the ball with some power, some toughness. And I think Blue fits that. It's hard to know, you know. If he's the guy for 7-8 weeks, which is likely the case, if not more, I don't feel good. I don't know if you do, John. I mean, I don't know if he can carry it 23 times a week. I just don't know that. He didn't even do that in college.
Yeah, there'll be some other guys in the mix there, but I think he's clearly their best option to replace Arian Foster, and it's a critical element here, as we talked about last week. They're kind of hosed, most likely, without a running attack. Moving on to Tennessee, I don't know what you have on my –
I watched that really closely. I mean, I watched hard.
I thought his arm strength looked very good to me on a couple of throws.
I thought he played really well, John. I mean, and his arm strength did look really good, especially on that 3rd-and-12 throw to Douglas, where he moved.
That was beautiful.
And He had such a quick delivery, and the ball came out with some juice. I thought Mariota played really well in that game. You know, he was comfortable with his drops and his sets. There was a rhythm to his movement. I don't think he looked to move one time. You know, on the one the one where he fumbled, which was not his fault, he was going to his third receiver, so he was going through a progression, which I thought he did effectively in that game. I thought there were a lot of positives to take away from that game.
Not a lot of positives for Bishop Sankey, not to throw the kid under the bus. He made it look horrible, but he averaged only 1.9 yards a carry. And, of course, David Cobb coming in the third quarter. But, Greg, I mean, it's was pretty clear to me that, David Cobb, and we've been saying this from day one, is a better first and second down back. He ran very low to the ground. I thought he showed some patience. He's a big dude who, you know, we didn't know for sure, but, you know, at the NFL level, I think he's got the strength to move the pile. I guess we still think he's going to take over. I mean, at some point, it's going to have to happen there.
Well, again, you know, it's the first preseason game, so you don't know about strategy and tactics, but I assume they did in the game what they've been practicing. And Mariota was under center an awful lot, and there were a lot of two-back sets, as we thought there might be with the fullback Fowler, who they drafted in the fourth round. So, you know, Cobb is that. That's what Cobb is. He's that back. So if they're going to put Mariota under center a decent amount and then have that be a meaningful foundation in their offense, I think when all's said and done, David Cobb is going to get more, far more of those snaps.
AFC West, did you see Brock Osweiler's tape?
I did. I did watch Brock Osweiler. I mean, he's not really relevant to a fantasy discussion, but I did watch him.
Well, he is relevant for the long term because it's a contract year for him. Peyton could call it a career after this year.
Oh, you're right. Good point.
Yeah, they're going to have a tough decision.
I'm focused on the here and now. I'm focused on the here and now, John. The future's a mystery.
It is a mystery. I mean, I don't even know what the hell is going to happen tomorrow.
There you go.
Your thoughts on Osweiler? I mean, he's huge, fairly mobile. Your thoughts on his ability to be a starting quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, I thought he showed some poise. I thought he went through progressions. He ran an excellent two-minute drive at the end of the first half where he showed some pocket movement, some touch, some precise ball placement. He's got a little bit of a funky delivery, which is probably my personal thing more than anything else. I think he's a little bit of a short armer because of it. So, you know, I think he's probably got a good arm, but that short arming to me at times prevents him from really driving the ball, you know, at those intermediate levels, those kinds of throws. But I think he looked like he belonged. He certainly didn't play fast or hurried. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, he could be the guy in Denver or he could be the guy somewhere else, theoretically.
Yeah, yeah, let's move on. Where did I want to go next? Oh, the Chargers. And it's only a handful of carries, but I don't know if you saw Melvin Gordon.
And you know what? I actually, John, you know, every once in a while, and I get one right every once in a while. You know, it just happens. Yeah. And I remember, you know, I'm sure you remember when we talked about Melvin Gordon in college, I said my only question with him was when the hole's not there, I thought he stopped his feet on occasion in college too. And he did it in his first game, and he even admitted it. So, you know, that's something I'm going to be real anxious to see as he goes forward. We know he's a talented runner, but in the NFL, if you're going to be a feature back and you're being counted on to sustain offense, you cannot stop your feet in the NFL. This is not college football.
Yeah, if you're tentative and you don't have a ton of functional strength to begin with and you're not going to catch passes most likely, that's problematic. So, yeah, okay. We'll keep
again, it's not an indictment. It's not an indictment. I mean, it's one game, but he did show that tendency in college, which a lot of people probably didn't take note of because it seemed like he had a 50-yard touchdown run every week. So, you know, I think, you know, in the NFL, those 50-yard touchdown runs are not going to happen every week. If he gets two of them, it'll probably be a lot. So, you know, in the NFL, if you're a foundation back, a feature back, you cut your teeth by running for 5 yards when it's blocked for two. That's what makes, you know, think about Marshawn Lynch, you know, Peterson, you know, when he plays in his prime. You know, think about those guys, Eddie Lacy, you know. I mean, what makes those backs great is when it's blocked for two, they get five or six. You know, what makes feature backs isn't the ability to run through gaping holes.
Yeah, look, the perception in the fantasy world is that Melvin Gordon's the guy, which he is. And he's a stud, and he's going to be a great fantasy pick. Well, fantasyguru.com readers know better, because when there are flaws and legitimate concerns, I mean, we're going to bring them up. Nothing personal. He's a good kid.
He's an unbelievable kid. He's an unbelievable kid. And it's never, I know for me, it's never personal ever, you know, but I mean, these are just concerns you see when, you know, and that's the joy I get in, you know, when I watch film of guys, I'm not watching 20 plays or highlights, you know, I watch Melvin Gordon like 8 games, you know, so how many carries is that in 8 games? You know, I'm not watching, you know, 20 carries.
Yeah. And I know our guy, Fran Duffy, who works for the Eagles, felt the same way about him. And you know, if you two guys,
no, Fran and I talked about that exact many times.
Yeah. And, if you guys think the same thing, that's not that we need a confirmation, Greg, but,
I appreciate that, John, but you know, sometimes we all need a pat on the back once in a while, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, sometimes, you know, you want to confirm that someone else is seeing what you're seeing. Let's move on to KC. And I was told by my friend who covers the team that, look, they're going to throw the ball down the field this year. That's an Andy Reid staple. We saw it in the first pass of the game, 50-yard attempt, traveled 50 yards in the air. Of course, it was incomplete. But your thoughts on Alex Smith at this point? Can you teach an old dog new tricks? I mean, is Alex Smith suddenly going to be a vertical passer?
Well, he's not a great deep ball passer, but what Andy wants to do, and he did that at times really effectively in Philly, was design things that are there at the deeper levels. So theoretically, any NFL quarterback, if you design it and it's there, he's going to throw it because that's the play. I think Alex Smith always has a concern about turning it loose when he doesn't feel like it's clean. And, you know, not that often is it clean. So I don't know, you know. Alex Smith has not been that guy in his career. You know, he's not a big arm. He doesn't have a bad arm. He's not a big power thrower, but he certainly doesn't have a bad arm. So Andy and Doug Peterson, they're going to try to design things so that it's as clean as it can possibly be, because every offense needs to have that chunk element in their offense.
Real quick, I want to go to, I'm not going to ask you about our guy Latavius. I know we've talked about him ad nauseum, but
you're talking about Oakland, Latavius Murray?
Yeah.
Oh, I talked to some people. They're really pleased with him. They think, you know, the only concern they have, which is a legitimate concern, and we've talked about this before, is pad level, you know, and how that relates to number of carries. But they say ability-wise, they really, really like him.
Well, I've said it on the radio. If he plays all 16 games, he'll be a top 10 back in fantasy. I have absolutely no idea, though, if they'll play all 16 games, the upright running style and all that. But I've actually also heard some really good things about rookie tight end Clive Walford. Now, we know pro ready, but how big of a factor is that now with Carr and Amari Cooper? Michael Crabtree's had a great off.
Yeah.
All of a sudden
they've got some weapons. Yeah. I mean, Walford's a guy to me, John, who when I watched him on film, I thought that there were many people who would view him as the best tight end in the draft. And who is I'm losing track of who the other Max Williams was the other guy. But I mean, Walford was a better inline player than Williams, who wasn't really used that way in Minnesota. And I thought that there'd be numerous teams, depending on utilization of a tight end, that would think Walford was the best tight end in the draft. And I he can get down the seam. He's got some vertical ability. He can block. He has a chance to be a pretty good tight end. And then they even can go two tight ends with Rivera, who's the receiver, who did a really nice job last year and seemed to have a rapport with Derek Carr. So I think their offense is actually pretty interesting if they can get their O-line, you know, at least playing average to above average.
Not bad. I saw Rodney Hudson blow up a nice little hole for Latavius on a 17-yard scamper to the right side, Greg.
A word you don't hear too often, John. Scamper.
That's right. He looked like DeMarco Murray on that run, by the way. I think there are some similarities. We can move on there, and we'll go to the NFC here on the FantasyGuru.com podcast. We're falling a little bit behind here, so we'll try and barrel through the NFC. In Big D, have you seen anything of the undrafted Gus Johnson? Because the Cowboys have had some injuries in there. Okay.
In fact, and I'll be totally honest, I didn't even know who he was. And I just watched that game on TV for, you know, a couple of series. I didn't even know who he was.
Yeah. I mean, he's got some quickness and some power. We'll see about him because they're thin here because Joseph Randle dealing with an oblique. McFadden is back. Also, you know, with the Martin scare on the offensive line.
I guess he's okay though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how would it, you know, one or two injuries on this O line? I mean, how would that affect the dynamics of this great O line and of course this offense? Because I'm a little concerned with Romo throwing it 550 times, which may happen this year, Greg, because of the situation in the backfield. Obviously, they're hard to rely on these guys.
Well, we've talked about this, John, and for people who listen, you know. Just to very quickly reiterate, I don't believe their offense can be the same with what they have in the backfield. So they're, to me, one of the most intriguing teams. And for you, too, I'm sure, because you have to sort of decide, is Romo going to throw it that many times? You know, are they going to have a back carry it 280 times? You know, I would lean toward Romo throwing it significantly more, and I don't believe any back's going to carry it 280 times.
Totally agree. And I think Romo's attempts last year were 473.
Way down. Yeah.
And that was down 100 from the year before. So I'm giving him, you know, another 100 attempts. Let me see that. Let me call that. Is that right? It was down 100 attempts from last year. Is that right? 473. No, I knew that was wrong. At 435.
Yeah, I
down
thought it was less.
From 530. Down from 535. So I'm giving him over 500, and I'm of the opinion that that's just one of the reasons why I love Jason Witten. You know, Jason Witten, I mean, look, say what you want, he's going to catch 80 balls this year.
He always does, John, doesn't he?
Well, not last year. I mean, that's the thing.
How many did
he
catch?
64.
Oh, boy, it seemed like... Yeah. It seemed like more to me, but you know, again, he just always seems like he's. Although I do remember a stretch where he didn't catch many, but that also could be a function of them throwing less.
Right, of course.
Yeah, that's
the point. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. I think Witten, and that's why I really like him for fantasy and point per reception leagues. I think he's going to be back to like 2011 numbers: 79 grabs for 940, 5 touchdowns. Pretty darn solid there. We'll move on to Philadelphia, and the buzz is gaining momentum on Samuel Bradford, and I understand you were out there. Is that correct, Greg? You've seen some practices in Philly?
I was there Wednesday. I went out Wednesday, and you know, I just watched Bradford throw it. I mean, you know, it's so funny, though. Bradford's a good thrower, but he doesn't throw it quite like Flacco either. But, you know, I assume Bradford's going to go this week, and we'll finally get some tape on him, particularly in this offense. So I'm really anxious to see that, you know, tomorrow night, and I'll be there. So I'm real anxious to see that.
Sanchez was not very good on Sunday, Greg.
He was not very good, no. He was not very good.
I don't know if this is breaking news or not, but I tweeted that Eagle fans are, you know, warming up to Sam Bradford just watching Sanchez because he was off on some throws there and a little late as usual. What'd you think of Aguilar's first action? Very explosive with the ball in his hands, Greg.
Yeah, I think he's he's a punt returner, very good run after catch. You know, he had two drops too, and I've heard through camp that he's had more drops than you would expect. You know, I don't know what that means. I didn't really see that a lot at USC, so I don't want to sit here and say, boy, he's got a problem with that. You know, it could be any number of reasons, so I don't want to make that a big deal, but clearly he showed excellent lateral explosion and quick vertical explosion on that quick screen. So, you know, he'll be a factor, you know, unless the drops become such an issue that it's you know, you can't put him out there, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I do think, Greg, the double catches were an issue in college. So, I mean, everything's correctable.
We'll find that out because he's going to play. I mean, there's no question he's playing. He's not going to be sitting on the bench when the season starts.
I think we talked to someone who may have watched like literally every target for him at USC, and there were double catches on tape there.
Right. Yeah. Right, but that didn't stick out to me maybe as much as it did to others, but that's okay. You know, I could have missed it too. So,
any thoughts? The guys were wondering actually with the Giants, you know, it's only one game, but if they have another poor showing in the preseason this weekend and maybe even next, I mean, what do you make of that? Because they were so bad in the preseason last year.
Yeah, I don't worry about that. I think they're going to be fine. I mean, again, I'm sure people listening who study the Giants closely, might, know this, and I don't, but I don't remember Eli Manning really being a great preseason quarterback,
Sure.
and again, like I said, maybe people are going to say, "Oh yeah, in 2009," because I don't remember, not but it just seems to me he's not that guy, So I don't want to really worry. I think their offense is going to be fine. I really do.
NFC North, with the Chicago Bears, with the Kevin White injury. Your thoughts on Eddie Royal playing outside? I mean, obviously
Yeah, well,
he's
he's done that. I mean,
yeah.
in an ideal world, do you want him there? Probably not, but he's done it numerous times in his career. So it's not like you're putting, Wes Welker out there, a guy who's hardly ever played, So, I think they can live with that. I mean, look, Kevin White, when you draft a guy in the top 10 at wideout, you want him to play. And I guess Kevin White could miss the whole season. But, and again, the one thing I will say, which may not, well, I guess it is related to fantasy because defense is part of fantasy. I think that their defense is going to be better than people think, especially as the year progresses. With Vic Fangio, who I think is one of the absolute best. If you just look at their roster and their depth, particularly front seven depth, I mean, I think they certainly have some potential issues in the secondary, but their front seven depth is pretty good, John. And I think their defense, and the reason I mention this is it impacts the fantasy offense because I think Foxy wants to play, as we all know, run the ball and play defense. He's going to minimize Cutler. Cutler's not throwing 650 balls.
No,
Unless they're down in games 31-10 in the third quarter, but I don't think that's going to happen.
yeah, Eddie Goldman and Ego Ferguson and Ratliff and Jarvis Jenkins, Pernell McVie, the acquisition there
I mean, they got a lot of linebackers. You started, I think Mason Foster's there, is he not? I mean, I think they got a lot of guys with a lot of NFL experience.
Moving on, Marcus Wilson, by the way, I know the kid is, what is he, 6'4"? He can run.
Yeah, and he's
He's very
aggravating me
thin
because
to me.
I thought he always had ability. I've talked to people that agree with me, and he just, as of this point, and maybe this is the year, maybe it's not, but he has the ability to be a quality NFL wideout, and it hasn't happened.
Have you seen him? Have you seen anything on tape that you're encouraged by, or is it more of a
Not in the
projection based
NFL.
on the. Yeah,
Not in the
exactly.
NFL. He's a projection. In college, I did, but not in the NFL.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's kind of similar to Marcus Wheaton. Like, we got to see something here from you. And
Well,
Wheaton, we've
Wheaton's
seen more
better.
from.
I mean, Wheaton has made plays in the NFL.
He
Wilson
has.
really hasn't. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Moving on here. We didn't really cover the Lions, but nothing riveting to say. Amir Abdullah in the preseason game did have a pretty good run called back, so he only had two carries on the books. But otherwise, it was a pretty efficient game for Stafford, but not much else going on there. So we'll move
No.
on. We'll talk about Green Bay, Greg. A lot of talk about them, playing faster, up tempo. That should help them run off more plays, but do you think that could hurt their efficiency at all? Your thoughts on
Well,
this new look Packer offense?
personally, John, I think that that's one reason Mike McCarthy gave up the play calling because I think he now feels totally comfortable with Aaron Rodgers essentially being Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, where he controls the pace of the game. They're not going to play speed tempo like Philly, every play, but they have that option. And then they have the option, not to huddle and do what Manning's done his whole career, where you kind of research the defense and you to snap it. You could snap it with 2 seconds left on the play clock. I think McCarthy feels really comfortable with Rodgers, and Rodgers will run that kind of offense. And, it's not, like I said, it's not necessarily a speed tempo, but it's a no huddle. And there's a difference between those two things. And it's Aaron Rodgers. I think we'd all agree. But it's funny. When people talk about Rodgers, they normally don't talk about him like that because his physical skill set is so great. But mentally,
True.
he's very, very good too. And I think they're really comfortable with that.
Absolutely. No question. Minnesota. Obviously, Teddy's look good. I mean, he's basically looking
Yeah.
about as good as you could look, right, in the preseason. I mean, I don't think he's made a mistake yet.
No, I like, I think he's a very, that's the word I keep using. I think Bridgewater is an efficient player. He's decisive with his reads and his throws. He's got a good understanding of coverage in relation to his route concepts. He doesn't force balls. I think he's very conscious of his checkdowns, and he's willing to do that. And which in an offense that has a great back, that's a great thing to do. You just keep sustaining and sustaining and sustaining. No, I think Bridgewater is a really efficient player.
I really like Jarius Wright from the slot in terms of
So
an
do I.
unheralded player. I think he
So do
really
I.
brings a lot of speed and juice to that position, Greg.
You know what? When he came out of Arkansas, I thought he'd be a really good slot receiver. And, sometimes it takes guys, as you know, John, 2, 3, 4 years, and everybody wants immediate gratification. But I think Jarius Wright's a really good slot receiver.
Loaded. When they really look at it now, they're absolutely loaded with Wright, Wallace. They're trying to get him the ball. He almost made an acrobatic catch for what it's worth and last week. And of course, Charles Johnson, we still like, and Rudolph is a possession type of guy, and they've done all this without Peterson. But does the Phil Loadholt injury change things in your mind? It's a big loss. Now, maybe it'll work out because they got TJ Clemmings in the fourth round as a value pick. He's raw, he's a former D end. Your thoughts on Clemmings potentially replacing Phil Loadholt at right tackle?
Well, yeah, and he was the guy who did come in and replaced him. So I thought he understood his assignments. I mean, I don't think he made mistakes. I thought he executed them with varying degrees of efficiency, but he seemed like he was aware. Now, again, he's not facing, teams that are going to game plan and go at him and try to break him down. But he's going to get the first shot. He's got talent. I Loadholt was a big man. I didn't think Loadholt was a great right tackle. So,
Right.
when you put a rookie in, I don't want to say that there's no change because it's a rookie and he could get, he could have some welcome to the NFL moments at any time. But I didn't think Loadholt was like a big time stud at right tackle.
Totally true. Yeah. I mean, he's huge dude for the running game and all that, but
Right.
he's average at best in pass pro. Hey,
But
look, by December, it may be a blessing in disguise. We may be looking at TJ Clemmings as a better option.
yeah, I mean, he's a very athletic kid.
Yeah, he is. How about Jameis Winston as we move on to Tampa? I mean, I thought his first quarter of action was kind of likely a microcosm of what we'll see. It was ugly. He looked in over his head. And then he stood tall in the pocket and threw a 40-yard pass to Vincent Jackson. It was a really nice throw. I mean,
Big time
your
throw.
takeaway from Jameis.
Kind of what I expected. I thought he made a couple of real good throws. I thought he had some issues understanding and recognizing defenders, particularly safeties in the middle of the field, which he did at Florida State as well last year. But I think that they clearly have worked with him, and he's taken to it because I thought his stride was a little shorter. I thought his delivery was a little more compact. Now, again, I think he's going to be in a tough spot because I think he's going to get blitzed a ton. They're going to try to force him to play fast. I think the O-line is a major work in progress. Young players, we have no idea how that's going to turn out, John. But I think Winston was kind of what I expected, given my view of him coming out and given the offensive line he's playing behind.
And of course, that is a line that looks to miss Dotson at right tackle for a little while here. So you got a left tackle who's a rookie. So that's the biggest concern, and it'll be a concern for sure. But he's resilient, if nothing else, Jameis. So we'll see. I'm sure he'll tough it through, but it's going to be an up and down year. Any
Yep.
thoughts on Doug Martin? I thought Doug Martin looked quicker, had some
So
nice
did I.
runs.
So did
Yeah.
I. Although I
But I
have
also.
heard from some people, and again, I'm just telling you what I've heard, it has
Yeah.
to happen on the field. I've heard that the coaching staff would like Charles Sims to be, I don't want to say the guy because I don't think anybody sees him as a 300 carry guy, but they really like him to be a guy that gets an awful lot of snaps.
Yeah, I've heard that they really want to have him have an active role
Yep.
as a complimentary guy and a third down back. A guy could potentially get 175 touches, something like that, which is a pretty considerable number
Yep.
with Doug Martin. But I do get the feeling with Martin that O line is it's not good, Greg. And I
Not at
do
the moment.
think I do think that Martin is doing everything he can. He's slim, he's trim, he's quicker and all that, but it's I still think he's going to be like a 3.7 yard a carry guy behind this O-line. So hopefully he'll get the volume. NFC South. Don't really have too much on the Falcons. You know, they're going to go a lot of two wide receiver sets here. So they're not going to, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of production, Greg, for a guy like Justin Hardy or Leonard Hankerson. I think they're going to go a lot of two tight end sets here with Toliolo.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll find out. We don't know about their backs yet because the two guys who theoretically will be their two guys, Coleman and Freeman, I guess, they haven't played yet, so we don't know.
Yeah. Well, Greg, I'm doing a radio show now this year with Roddy White. How about that?
With Roddy White?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
John, you're just all over the place.
That's
right,
man.
You're an important guy.
And Roddy said that it's all Vonta Freeman right now. He's just got a better understanding of everything. And look, he brought up a good point. When you go with a rookie, and obviously they both missed time, when you go to a rookie like Tevin Coleman, who's not ready for prime time, not totally up to speed, it puts the quarterback at risk. So,
Coleman comes from Indiana that played a spread up-tempo offense. That's not what they're going to play in Atlanta. So he's not used to any of those things that you have to do in the NFL, you know, obviously besides when you hand him the ball, but that's, you know, that's not all there is.
100%, exactly. So it'll be Freeman early on here. The question is, can he hold off Coleman? And certainly the current staff did draft Coleman, didn't draft Freeman. So they like
yep.
him. There's no question. Boy, how about the Carolina Panthers? I think my daughter knows the answer to this one here, but
Corey Brown, that's my guy.
Yeah. Your guy, Philly Brown.
That's
Talk
my
about
guy.
Him.
I'm going with Corey Brown. You know, the only issue with him is his size. He's small. But, you know, the last, what, three or four or five games last year, he became somewhat of a factor, as you remember. They really like him. I know that. And I think he's going to get meaningful snaps. Right now, Devin Funchess is a total unknown, no matter
yes.
what people say. I mean, I know they came out publicly and said they had a first-round grade on him, and that's fine. But, I mean, he's an unknown at this point. I didn't see him that way, but that doesn't make them wrong or me right. I mean, you know, everybody sees stuff differently, obviously. But I think Corey Brown has a chance to be a meaningful part of this offense as a wideout.
You know, he kind of emerged as their deep threat last year. You know,
yeah, he did.
They didn't have 10 Ginn, but did you – I'm trying to recall him doing anything other than getting downfield targets.
And I think that's where he needs to learn. You know, again, when I say Corey Brown, I mean, I'm having some fun. I'm not suggesting he's catching 90 for 1,400, John.
Of course.
But I think given the fact that there's not going to be a lot of wideouts who are available, and, you know, he's been there, I think he's going to get meaningful snaps and he's going to catch balls.
But how critical is the overall loss of Benjamin to the entire offense here? That's problematic because – say what you want about Benjamin. I thought it was impressive how he walked into a number one role and handled
yep.
it pretty well. I mean, let's be honest.
I agree.
He didn't catch a high percentage of his targets, but there's no way in hell that Funchess is doing that, Greg.
I would think not, but you know, if they think so, you know, he's going to be given every chance to be that guy. I don't think he was anywhere near the prospect. Again, this is my evaluation. I don't think he was anywhere near the prospect Kelvin Benjamin was when Benjamin came out of Florida State, but that's me.
Yeah, more targets, obviously, for Greg Olsen here for the Carolina Panthers. New Orleans, Cooks is looking really good. Not all that much going on here. Although, you told us, Brandon Coleman, you told us in April he was going to be a factor, Greg, and he's going to be a factor. Big body.
Yeah, I mean, he will be. I mean,
why can't he be Jimmy Graham, Greg? Why can't he be Jimmy Graham for him?
He can.
Right?
He theoretically can be. I mean, we have to wait and see, and you don't know off a preseason game exactly what Sean Payton's going to do tactically, but I think you're going to see elements of what they did with Jimmy Graham and how they utilize Brandon Coleman. I really do.
NFC West, I want you to break out the rugby tape for Jared Hayne.
Oh, stop.
Well, actually,
although, you know what? I've heard that he's been really good on special teams and that he has a very legitimate chance to make the team because of that.
Yeah, I know.
But look, when all said and done, he's not going to get, you know, I mean, assuming health, it's Hyde, it's Bush. I mean, you know, Hain is not going to get, you know, meaningful carries in games.
Yeah. Arizona, you think Chris Johnson has anything left? Apparently he does. And I guess in theory it makes some sense because we can't rely on Chris Johnson running the football. And look, Bruce Arians throwing it around, and Johnson can catch the ball. So there are some similarities maybe to an Andre Ellington. Your thoughts on Chris Johnson here in Arizona?
Well, I think Bruce Arians has pretty much set the bar low, and I think that's the right thing to do. I think that ultimately, you know, if he's used as kind of a satellite player, I think he can have some value. He was always a good receiver. You know, we've talked for 3-4 years that he's no longer a feature back. They didn't sign him to be that guy. They signed him to be a piece of an offensive puzzle in an offense that throws the ball. So can he have some value? Sure he could. I mean, theoretically, and again, you know, why couldn't he be their version of a Darren Sproles type player?
Yeah, yeah. And look, let's not overexpose Ellington. We can't give this kid 25
right.
touches a game.
Correct. And I think they know that too.
Yeah, and that's why they drafted David Johnson, frustrated with him,
yeah.
with his hamstring, and that's why they brought in Chris Johnson. How about Palmer? I watched that game. I was like, oh, my God. He literally, it's like it never happened, that ACL. Now, granted, only 4 dropbacks, but I thought he looked very comfortable, Greg.
Yeah, he's a guy for some reason, John, that a lot of people just don't seem to feel good about, and I don't know why, because he's actually had a real solid professional career, and he's always been a very good thrower. And, you know, again, I can't speak to what other people think, but he's a real professional quarterback, and if he can play 16 games, and I know that's an if at this point in his career, we know that, but if he can, they have a good team. I mean, and he's a professional quarterback. You know, in his last 15 starts for that team, he's 13-2.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And last year for fantasy, over 20 points a game, which is a real
yeah.
solid number. For the Rams, I think we can we'll give Nick Foles another week to evaluate.
Yeah, too like early. Too early.
Can't really give him a lot of credit for that. Screen pass to Tavon Austin, who did look good on that run. But finally, Seattle, do you think Tyler Lockett can do anything in the passing game here? I know they like him. And are you concerned with the O-line? Because it stinks. Now, it's been bad for a while, and we just don't
yeah.
notice it as much because of Russell Wilson.
Yeah, and you know, look, I don't know their philosophical feeling about their O-line. They may feel because of Wilson and Lynch that it doesn't have to be, they don't need, you know, 5 all pros, but there is a level at which you need, you know, some quality. I think we'll have a tough time in the preseason with them, John, because I don't think they're going to show you a whole lot of how they plan on using Jimmy Graham. I really don't.
Right.
You know, Darrell Bevell is a veteran coordinator. I don't think we're going to get a feel for that. And you know, that's just my opinion. Lockett, again, I'm not even sure. You know, we may not get a great feel for that either. You know, so I think they're one of those teams that the preseason, it's going to be real hard. Other than the fact that we know Marshawn Lynch is going to carry the ball and gain yards, you know, when the regular season starts, I'm not exactly sure how they're going to utilize their players, and I don't think they're going to put a whole lot of that out there.
Another great podcast in the books. That's going to wrap it up here on a Friday. We'll be back next week to break down week 2 of the preseason. Greg, we appreciate your insight there. Have a great weekend. For Greg Cosell, I'm John Hansen. Check out fantasyguru.com.